Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 19th, 1999. We are in the fireside room of Koinonia this evening. Your presenter's name is Jill Whitman. Today's session number is 99-4 and is titled, Our Water, Where Does It Come From? Where Does It Go? Let's listen in.
Familiar with the hydrologic cycle where we think about water going through a cycle of evaporation up into the atmosphere and precipitation and then being back on the surface or in groundwater. And one of the reasons that I put this diagram up is that it also happens to show something about sort of some human use of the land on there. And I think that's what's really important as we start thinking about water here. We have to keep in mind in most settings both the surface water and what we think of as our groundwater. Here, the source of water actually comes from surface water that we use here in Holden Village. But do people here know where their domestic water comes from at home? Is it groundwater or surface water? Groundwater in Trevaway. Surface water in Puyallup. Both of us. How about in Salem? Do you know?
It comes from the river, the Ohio River.
Is it extracted from the river? So it's surface water?
Ours is surface water from the dam.
Surface water as well?
I don't feel
there it's wells. Nope, there it's wells. Peleliu is wells. That's right. And Puyallup and City of Tacoma have surface water, but the Parkland area is still on wells. Okay. How about you? Do you know where your water supply comes from in the outside world?
Vancouver, BC has...
Is it surface?
Surface water. It has a fenced-off water district from the Marshall Mountains.
And what will... Since many of us have surface water as a source, then a lot of what we sort of talk about today actually ties into that. I'm an oceanographer by my original training, and this is a really interesting diagram to make us think about water at the surface of the earth. They always use an oceanography textbook, so don't use it in a lot of other ones, but when we look at the surface of the earth, 99% of the water associated with the earth is salt water, and that isn't very useful to us in our domestic water supplies or even for agriculture and so on. And then actually when we look at what little there is in the way of fresh water, a huge proportion of that is frozen in land ice and Antarctica and Greenland and so on. And actually it's a very small proportion of the world's water which is actually available to us as either groundwater or surface water that we can access. But we all make use of water in our lives. Water is used for a huge number of different things, and a diagram that sort of helps us think about this in terms of some different uses. Oops, I'll just leave the key up there so people can read the unfocused part of it. But this is looking at sort of at what happens to precipitation. We can see two-thirds of it actually evaporates. And then this is global water use and U.S. water use. And we can see that in both cases, a huge proportion of water use actually goes toward agriculture. In the United States, being that we're a developed country, we have a huge proportion actually being used for industry. Now, those aren't of consequence here in Holden Village. The agriculture side is, but not the industry side. But still worth us sort of keeping in mind as we go back out of Holden. Also an interesting way to look at water is to think about water usage both in terms of simply water withdrawn from whatever source and water actually consumed. And so, for example, if we look at domestic water use, only about a third of that is actually consumed. The rest of it is returned back into the system. And that's part of what we'll be talking about here. But you know, water goes through our system. It's used for laundry, and it's used in our toilets and used in showers, and that ultimately goes back out into the system. And a small proportion of it actually gets consumed. We can see in the case of power plants, very little of it is consumed. Water is usually simply withdrawn, used as part of, say, a cooling process, and then returned back out into the system, often not in exactly the same condition that it came in. In the case of irrigation, water is withdrawn, the water consumption will tend to be that which is actually lost to evaporation. The rest of it sort of returns back into groundwater. Now, if we look at water consumption rates, once again, one of these statistics that we in the U.S. Don't necessarily want to be very proud of, we see that per head water consumption in the U.S. Is very high compared to many other countries or areas in the world, Africa and Asia being very low. In contrast, we see that in Europe, actually, water consumption is far lower than it is in North America. And that has something to do with the kinds of practices that they're involved in. We have a huge amount of land area in North America devoted to agriculture, and far less of that is available in Europe. So there's somewhat different water consumption rates.
But a lot of our agriculture area is drier than other people's.
So we put lots more water into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What
about? Yeah, all we have to do is go to Eastern Washington to think about that, don't we?
Where would Central America be?
Well, my guess is Central America is down much more at the right-hand end, along with the developing countries that we see in Asia and Africa. I'm sure you all have had this kind of little graph beat into you through some source of information or another, just to look at the different types of things that we do that use water in our lives. It's important for us here, actually, when we look at this, and as you go around the village, there are all sorts of little signs to help remind you about these kinds of things, that some of the things that we do here in the village use a huge amount of water, and we come in from the outside, we're accustomed to our shower a day, and most of us continue that habit when we're here at Alton, and it does use a huge amount of water compared to some of the other things that we do. When we look at water, we look both at our water supplies and some of the issues around our water supplies, particularly in terms of quality of water and in terms of quantity of water. And that obviously varies very much depending upon what part of the world we're in. And then we also look at what we do with our water after we use it. And So what I wanted us to do today was to just talk about some of these issues as related to Alton Village. I serve, you all heard at dinner, I'm sure, the announcement about the Science and Technology Committee, which is meeting this weekend. I serve on that committee. My colleague, also from PLU, Dean Waldo, serves on that committee. And then we have with us Daniel, who's actually the utilities manager for Alton Village. And if you get close enough to read, it's HAPT. It's really, what does it say, Alton?
Electric light and power.
And so he's involved in being responsible for the various utilities here. You can tell us why we had no power for a brief interval at lunch.
Actually, I was driving the bus, so I don't know.
Oh, you have
that. Someone else took care of it.
But he's involved in both the electric light and power and also the water side of the utilities here. And so I asked Daniel if he'd be willing to be here to be a resource to people. I thought I could help to get this discussion going, but I'm sure people have lots of questions about things here. The water supply here in the village, has anybody ever hiked up to the head of the water supply here in the village? And you go up, and what do you find?
A dam?
Yep, you see a little diversion dam, that's right. Up, if you've been up to the third level, you've probably seen the water tank, which is the storage for it. And if you climb up above that, and I'm sure Daniel has great climbing legs because you go up and check it regularly, but you can climb up what was once upon a time a road, although I've never quite understood the feasibility of that. And you go up to a small dam where the water is diverted both for the hydropower plant and for the water supply here in the village. And then, for many years in the village, the water simply went into a tank, and it was held in the tank and dispersed to supply the village. It was then, do you know when they started chlorinating the water?
It was in the 60s, I don't remember.
So early on in the history.
Maybe 69 or 67.
They started chlorinating water, and of course most of us are familiar with having our water chlorinated at home. But most recently, because this is a place that has people coming and paying for the privilege of being here in the village, the village must meet all of the state requirements for purification of the water, which is sold to customers. And this has resulted in some major changes in the water supply system to the village. One of the things that happened was a second water tank was actually built, and that was constructed, it was new about 5 or 6 years ago, wasn't it? Which gave them more than double the capacity of water storage. It also was a tank which was fully enclosed and offered a little bit more protection from critters and elements and so on. But more recently than that, the village has had to install a system for filtration of the water. And why don't you go ahead and briefly describe that, Daniel, since you know a bit.
We have
lots more.
The water comes from Copper Creek, and it then goes into the filtration system, which is located in the new garage. We have a first set of filters, which have they're backwashable, which means that they can clean themselves out. It's a fine kind of granular, it's not sand, it's actually ceramic or balls, but it's a filter media, so the water goes through that and everything is supposed to be removed. Then it goes through another set of filters, which are very similar to a backpacking filter, just bigger. They have a cartridge in them. Cartridge is, I guess, about this big around. It stands about 3 feet. And then it goes through that cartridge, which is a Giardia cartridge. And everything is filtered out, so it can filter out Cryptosporidium and Giardia and any coliform, anything like that. All the creatures that would give people trouble if they drank them. And then after that, we chlorinate it.
And that system is able to process about, what'd you say, 72, except it's never made that. Theoretically,
right,
it can process 72,000 gallons a day, although it hasn't been that.
Typical use is 15 to 30,000 gallons?
Well,
summer you said was 30 to 35,000 typical?
It depends. We send about 15,000 to the drain fields a day. But if we're doing full watering, we'll use between 30 and 40,000.
Is it feasible to have two systems, one that goes on the lawn and through the laundry and such?
Great question. Science and Technology Committee has this discussion, I think, annually, if not twice a year, when we meet.
Right next to the additional hydro plant.
That's right. We've had a lot of discussion about that. How many people at home water their lawns with water which has actually been through some system in your house, which is called gray water, something that may have been through your washing machine or through showers. And
don't have a system to do it.
In most states, it's not legal to do it. There are some places where it's sort of grandfathered in. My parents have a 100-year-old cottage in Maine, and they're allowed to discharge directly the laundry water out onto the green stuff that grows, which is not a lawn.
I was thinking, for 25 years we lived in the country on a well, which was down almost 400 feet. And when we first moved into the home, we weren't aware that our neighbor who grows cherries was having it tested every year because he had to certify he had fresh water for the migrant pickers. But after we had lived there for a few years, he started coming up, well, now we shouldn't be using the well water because we've got this, you know, coliform bacteria, yeah. And we talked then about what do we do? Could we conceivably use that water for the lawn and the laundry and all that, and then have something in the house that would give us additional purification? We sold the house before we got to that point. But.
Well, this is, and actually Daniel and I were talking about this morning. I mean, what we do here, all the water that goes through that system is then distributed to the village. It's distributed to the village through very ancient pipes. I'm sure Daniel has seen them. Dean and I have had the privilege of seeing some of these pipes. Most of these pipes have been here since the village was constructed for mining, and they're pipes which have experienced a huge amount of corrosion. We have extremely soft water here in the village. I'm sure everybody's encountered that when you wash up your face and try to rinse off, it always still feels smooth. That's because we have surface water that comes basically directly from snowmelt, so it's never had a chance to pick up any dissolved minerals. And that very, very soft water then does just eat away at the pipes over time. And so we're doing a variety of things. We're taking and filtering all of the water which comes down and is distributed in the village. And these filters that Daniel was talking about are not cheap.
No.
And so you start looking at having to, the maintenance of keeping these filters in place. Then you start thinking about the volume of water that you're distributing through the system. And is there some alternative? Could the water which is used on the lawns and gardens come from some other source? Now, it turns out in this day and age, if you want to extract water from anywhere, you have to have a permit from anything. I mean, if we had some failure of the water supply system, they have an emergency backup where they can pump water out of the creek to the fire hoses if we had some emergency that involved fires. And they wouldn't have to have a special permit for that. But if they were regularly extracting water from Railroad Creek, for example, from the lawns and gardens, they would have to have a permit to sort of have access to those water rights and to extract them, to divert some of the water out of the creek. And those are very hard to come by.
And you also have the other questions of, you know, kids getting a drink from the water hose. And
Right. So we've had a lot of discussion in the Science and Technology Committee about, can we take the gray water, you know, the water that's gone through the showers or through the laundry, and put that on the lawns and gardens. But again, you have this problem of the community would be exposed to the water. And I'm sure the state would never authorize the gray water distribution here. Still a concern, though, if you think about extracting the water out of the creek. I mean, a very valid question, and one that, you know, the village is going to continue to wrestle with. No easy answer at all. The water is used for a variety of different things here in the village. Sort of each of us individually drinks it, bathes, showers. If we do laundry, we know it goes through the laundry when we drop our sheets off at the end of our stay, or at the end of sometime when we want our sheets washed. Obviously, it's all going through that. It is obviously being used extensively in the kitchen, both in terms of the cooking process and dishwashing. And then it's also there for lawns and gardens, and ultimately it's also there as a resource for fire suppression. Fortunately, that use doesn't amount to much with frequency. We then have to think about what happens to the water after we use it. And this is perhaps the thing on the very front burner of issues that Holden is currently dealing with, is the wastewater disposal system here. All of us, I think, tend to let the water go down the drain or the toilet, and back home, you know, sort of know it goes somewhere down a set of pipes. And if we have a septic system at home, then we tend to be a little bit more aware of perhaps our daily impact on that. If we're on some city sewer, then I think we tend to think less about that. But here in Holden, it's very much an issue. Some of you were here to participate in the conversations about energy and solid waste, and just like solid waste, Holden has to deal with all the wastewater as well. Historically, when the mine operated, there was a large septic system of sorts, sort of a waste digester with a drain field, and that was located east of Narnia, so slightly down valley from Narnia. It was located extremely close to Railroad Creek, and the wastewater that went through the drain field basically flowed immediately out into Railroad Creek. Has anybody been here in spring melt-off? Not only is there a huge amount of surface water here, but there's just an incredible amount of water that flows underground as the melt-off takes place here. I was here one spring about 5 years ago, and they had the misfortune to discover they had just taken out the old underground storage tanks for oil and had not had a chance to fill in one of those holes before 3 feet of snow fell in October. And when the melt-off finally took place and they got to see, I can never remember the numbers of the lodges, what's this, two?
Four.
The lodge four, the hole was twice as big as it had been after they took the tank out, because the runoff and the underground flow and the groundwater had just come right under lodge four and just eroded huge amounts of the sediment off there. That was sort of one of the first times in recent history people have watched up close this incredible amount of water that just flows underground down into the stream system. So you can imagine that with the drain fields located very close to the creek, then as that melt-off took place,
I was afraid we were going to lose Lodge 4 at that point, you know,
they were very afraid. It was sort of creepy. There was so much snow that nobody really knew what was going on until It got to be late. Were you here early that season?
I don't remember when
must have been on my way, which would have been in May.
Yeah, and I was here just at the very end of May. We were attempting to fill the hole. In 1985, had the village been using that system up until 1985? It had the old system until 85? Or had they built their first system and then had to rebuild it all over again? But in 1985...
I think they had built the system.
And then, yeah. Is that what you remember, Chief Dean?
I remember there were one a correction attempt at the drainage field, which is up the road. But I don't remember when they stopped using one there.
Well, in 1985, the current system, which is in use, went into place. And what we still have is a holding tank, a septic system, septic tank down here, again, just east of Narnia. There's actually this construction tape around it in the hall. Was something being replaced down there? So?
Yeah, it's being repaired to function better. It wasn't designed properly.
Right. And then the drain fields are located up in the old Miners Village. I know many of you have been here and know where the Miners Village is. Do you all know where the Miners Village is? In the back row there, do you all know where it is? Okay. So, in fact, for the water to get there, it actually has to be pumped because it's going upslope into that area. And then there are four drain fields, and the water is pumped out into those drain fields. That system has had its problems over time. It is probably not a system that was really designed for the capacity of waste that the village generates. So that's always been a problem. It's probably not a system that was designed appropriately, and Daniel alluded to that in terms of the septic tank. And they've had serious problems. Now, a few of you were here last week, is that right?
We weren't.
You weren't here yet last week.
We missed it by one day.
Oh. And they just said, I know you. Ms. John, is that right? You were here last week,
yes.
Right?
I was here for sewer day.
One of the things that you did this spring, and can you fill in a bit? Christopher told Dean and I some details about this. They actually had a planned sewer day. Was it early June? Is that what it was? Mm-hmm. And they shut the system down. They actually knew in advance. It was very planned, and so they brought in some porta potties to provide the village with some places to use at that time, and they did some extensive work. They have to, every second year, pump out the septic tank, just as anyone who has a septic tank at home would have to do. For many years, they had a permit to spray that septic tank waste up on the tailing piles. And the tailing piles are not a place that are very fertile, and this has always been considered sort of a dual benefit, a place to get rid of the septic tank sludge and perhaps add just a little bit of organic material and nutrients up to the top of the tailings. But the whole issue around the tailings is still very much in negotiation as to what will happen to them as a toxic waste site, a hazardous waste site. And so this year it was deemed not appropriate to even contemplate putting the waste there, so it was trucked downhill. Is it at 8 miles?
No, it's at about 2.5 miles.
2.5, just at the top of the slope, isn't it?
Just below the hillside.
Down to where they had, that's where they extracted the gravel from many years ago, mm-hmm. Right? And so they took it down there and disposed of it down there. In addition to that, they did some major some efforts to rehabilitate the septic tank, and they also had a camera go through the system, the pipes down here in the village, all the way up to the drain field, did they go?
No, they didn't look at the drain, they just looked at the collection system
here to look at its condition. Now that was planned, and they did it, you actually started late in the day, so that most of the work was done overnight, so the impact to the village was less. My people were prepared for that, but a little over a week ago, it wasn't such a planned event. There turned out to be a blockage. And for 6 hours, the village was without water because the water supply had to be turned off so that the sewer pipes could be drained to try and find where this blockage was. And that was with 450 people in the village, wasn't it? From what, just the end of breakfast until mid-late afternoon. And it turned out a variety of things had occurred. Been some settling, presumably settling in the pipe. Hopefully it wasn't actually laid that way. A low area in the pipe system. Have been some collection of some gravel type material which had fallen in when the system had been open previously, and then just a buildup of some of the small amount of solids that go down through the toilet systems.
How did you find the problem area?
Well, we realized that it was probably in the main. Mm-hmm. So we pulled up the access cover over there by Cornelia, the way, or by the VC, the way we discovered it was coming up into the bottom of the pool hall. Because that's the lowest point of the system, and so it backs up and just overflows the toilets. Mm-hmm. And so we looked there, and it was stopped up there. So they tried to run a snake down, and they could get the snake down about 120 feet, and it hit something hard, and they couldn't get through it. And so they were to drain, we pumped out the area that was blocked there and actually ran it over to the tank directly. We just did a long pipe over and just pumped it. They couldn't get the snake through, so they just measured how far the snake went and got the pipe and then dug it up and then cut a hole in it right there.
And you were conveniently out of the village, is that what I mean?
No, I was
Oh,
here.
You were in the village, okay.
I was here.
Who was it? Oh, I know.
Derek, the plumber.
He was out of the village.
The plumber would just return the next day.
And how big a pipe is this? Was this?
8-inch.
8-inch, yeah.
Unfortunately, Christopher, who's the operations manager, was describing to Dean and I that fortunately, because it's not a pressurized system, like water supply would be, they were able to put a collar on it around the hole that had been cut. So the repair was something that they were able to do at that time. This is the issue of the septic system and drain fields is a real problem, and last summer there was a man hired to come up and do an extensive study of that, and he was really quite an intriguing man. Did you get to meet him?
Oh yeah.
His boast was that he had no sense of smell, so that this was no challenge to him to be involved in wastewater disposal systems, because he could go down and investigate them and have no serious consequences. How thick was the report, what I hear? 3 inches that he put together. Yeah. With observations about that. And as a result of that, another thing that was done this spring was the drain fields. The piping in the drain fields was cleaned out as well, right? Mm-hmm. And does that seem to have been helped the system?
Yes, there was a lot of stuff collected in some of the way the drain fields work is they come in into the middle of the field, and then there are 12 pipes going this way and 12 pipes going this way, and the pipes have little holes in them. Every about 4 feet there's a hole, so that you just spread the stuff out and it seeps through the ground, and naturally occurring bacteria then are able to eat it up. But what had happened is it would come out and it would fill the pipes right near the manifold where it actually comes out, but the outer, more lateral pipes, which were further away, didn't get as much flow, and so they would not get as much water flushing them out, and they began to build up with solids. And so we kind of forced all that out, and then also put in a different type of system, manifold system, so that it would do basically 6 pipes at a time, 3, 3, 3, and 3. So that when the pipes are on, they're really getting a lot, good amount of water, so that it doesn't begin to dry up in there.
Oh, that's good.
And we've also begun to rotate with the different, we call them mounds, or actually drain fields put in, which the design of the fields themselves wasn't too bad, but the contractor put them in, gypped the village out of a few $100,000 and didn't really build them. Put in only a few of the lines, and so the village then repaired them, but that never was really communicated to the state, so the state required mounds to be put on top of those, and these mounds then are on top of these drain fields, and so we're actually using it all right now. We're kind of shifting in between. As one gets too much, then we shift to another to kind of use all that surface area that we have.
And this is a temporary measure?
Yes. more than likely. We would like to have this actually work. What's probably going to happen is we'll have to build a new one. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, there's been a variety of recommendations out of his preliminary study, and one of them is actually to have a new system. One advantage to installing a new system is the discussion would be to have it down in the valley, which would reduce having to actually pump, since you could use gravity to transport it down to that location. Yeah.
When we came to Fields Point Landing, they had things called composting toilets, which I had never seen before. Would you comment on what the heck that is, and is that feasible for any place else in the world but there?
Now, do those composting toilets have any solar panels with them, do you say?
Not the ones at Field Point that I'm aware of.
They're just, I mean, they're sort of glorified outhouses, aren't they?
That you had to remove the solids.
Periodically.
Well, but and by the time you should remove the solids, they should be fairly, I mean, completely composted. But I think the design such the flow is pushing it down, and then it somehow, I think they have the liquid transfer rate so that it stays at a certain amount of water, and then it just composts naturally with the occurring bacteria.
It's been a discussion here, should one look to alternatives. How many of the toilets in the village are low flow toilets?
I don't know.
Not many, is my impression.
Chalets, I think, are more that way than, because they have more traditional toilets, as opposed to the spring, what we call them. Mm-hmm.
But when the hotel was remodeled, those were low flow ones put in there, weren't they? Upstairs in the hotel?
I think so.
I thought so. That was my memory of that. But, I mean, that's been some discussion here, is should we have some alternatives? One of the great discussions is, should we have group showers? You know, some shower building, for example, rather than sort of having showers everywhere. And one thing that might do is sort of reduce the number of showers that people take, and hence reduce the sort of usage on the system.
All the shower heads are the 5 liter per minute.
Yeah, they are low flow. That's right.
If you took the 270 liters used in that shower lists there and divide by a 5 liter per minute rate, you'd be talking about almost a 45-minute, 50-minute shower.
That's right.
I don't think.
Here, hard to do.
Yeah.
But been some discussion, and there are other places that those composting toilets are used. A lot of national park sites that are fairly remote, so that they don't actually have water supply, you'll find those in use. I know of a few that I personally have been to. They tend to be used at a place where water is not necessarily available.
People use them at their cabins instead of at the outhouse.
Right. So they wouldn't be useful to us here, or they wouldn't be useful to us here if.
In a more centralized system, like when you have a village of people, there would be so much labor in that every so often you have to service, you have to clean out the compostable material, which is not always completely composted, and there's sort of a problem of getting the right balance. Whenever you have a dense enough population like here, it is usually easier to have some sort of just mass collection and treatment if you have a good treatment. The problem with Holden is that we've had sort of 20 years of bad design and bad construction followed by bad repairs, by bad construction, by bad design. And meanwhile, just getting us worse and worse and worse and spending lots of money. And so now we're looking at, wow, this whole thing is kind of messed up, and basically having to redo the whole thing. If we can get it redone, it will probably work fine. But we're looking at probably to do the whole thing, you know, between a quarter and $500,000.
That's including the distribution or the collection?
Yes.
What we could be useful today at this point is, I'm sure people have lots of questions, and there are people here, Daniel in particular, with lots of expertise to answer that. And also, I think one of the things that I always find, I leave Holden thinking about not only what I do here at Holden, but what I do here, how I may change at home. So I think it's a great reminder of that when we're here, that these issues are sort of in the forefront of life here in the village, and we may not be as aware of them at home, but we can certainly take some of those ideas with us. But some of the things that Daniel has alluded to are real issues that the village faces. And the infrastructure of the collection system and the treatment system is very old and aging and failing. And a lot of money would be involved in needing to try to improve that system. One of the things that's also happened over the almost 40 years of the village's existence and its affiliation with what we know now rather than the previous 20 years of mining is that regulations have really increased. And the kinds of things that the village has to deal with and face in the regulatory environment are much stricter than they were in the early 1960s when the village came into being in its current incarnation. One of the other issues that the village faces in all these aspects of sort of keeping the system operating and trying to do improvements is staff. And one of the things that science and technology is always asked, do you know anybody who might be somebody who will come in one of these staff positions? Daniel will be leaving this fall. There's a number of people who are part of the operations here at Holden whose term of service here is up, and they'll be moving on. And there's always a need for very qualified or even people who are willing to go through some training to be here and take on those roles here in the village. And so that's something that all of us can at least try to keep in mind if we know of people. They have people who have come up and done very brief intervals of work here in the village. Daniel was telling me this morning that they have an electrician who has come up and done some work and is scheduled, I guess, to come up and do a little bit more, comes in for short intervals of time with planned tasks. And those are also very important resources to the village if a project is going to happen to get some group who can take a commitment to come on for a short interval of time. But at this point, I just want this to turn into sort of open discussion about what people think some of the issues are and some of the strategies for the future. And questions, any questions that you may have for people here. Well, this is just like our classes at PLU, isn't it, Dave?
But at least we have people sitting in the front row.
That's true, but not our PLU students.
Well, I have a question, but I missed the first half of your talk, so maybe you answered it. Are the river showers on the same water system as the village?
Down at the river sauna?
Mm-hmm.
The clean side of the water is.
The what?
The clean side, the drinking water, the waters that come out of the shower and out of the faucets. It's the same water that you get out of the
faucet. Same water as in the village here, okay.
But it doesn't go to the drain fields. It has its own little drain field.
Oh, really?
So the
okay.
Drain part of it is different.
Okay, because I know hikers can use those showers, and I was wondering, maybe that's because there's something better about them, you know, whatever. And that might be it. It goes to a different drain field, so it's not as much of a problem.
Yeah, and it's just, Holden just provides that as a service, you know. It's not any real reason. I mean, it doesn't hurt us any really to do it.
Oh, okay.
You know, the amount of water that's used there is minimal, and then we only have it open in the summer when there's plenty of hydropower to heat the hot water. So it's there for the people who want to use the river sauna for guests, and, you know, we just open up to hikers as a hospitality. Okay. The city sauna actually is also on its own drain field. So the water that, you know, there's constantly a flow of water going through there, and that's actually drinking water that's going into that plunge tank, but it drains on its own little field.
So where's that located?
The drain field? Or
For that?
The drain field
for the city sauna?
It's near the hotel, kind of above the hotel, I think.
You know when you have a blockage, like you talked about this big blockage that stopped the water for 6 hours? I mean, what is it generally? Is it always the same thing?
Well, the only other blockage was 2 years ago, and it didn't say what it was. It said it was just like, it's like sticks and stuff, I think, last time. This time it was gravel. Part of the problem with the collection system, there's the original 1937 miner village system, which was clay, and then there's the terracotta, and then there's the 1980 something another PVC system that was put in by the village. The ironically, the miner's one is probably a little better condition, because when the village installed it, used volunteer labor, which is what we use, and didn't have very good supervision or something, they put it in backwards, for one thing. The way pipe goes is you have a bell, and the bell's supposed to be up so that it's smooth, there's no catch. Well, they put it backwards so there's a lip at every union. So every 8 feet, there's a lip, and that catches stuff. Then instead of just going at a nice slope, it kind of goes like this. So you have these low pockets where stuff, solids will settle out and just stay there. And so that happens throughout the system. Mm. Then with the clay parts, roots have broken through, and so there's, you know, groundwater leakage and debris can get in there that way, and there's some other, you know, gaps in the system and things like that.
One of the most interesting things, though, I think about Daniel's answer to you was, well, it didn't say what it was. And this is part of the issue that the village faces, is that with the staff turnover, all there is some perhaps written report. Uh-huh. And not necessarily the personnel in the village who remember the experience to share that the next time around. Which, I mean, it's true in municipalities as well. I live in the old part of Puyallup in a house that's approaching 80 years old, and they're out there surveying constantly right now to figure out where the pipes are in the streets, because they've been there a long time. There are a few people still kicking around who were there maybe 35 years ago when some of these pipes were installed, but, you know, if you can track them down, maybe they remember where they were. So it's not unique to Holden that you have this problem, but Holden perhaps has a more rapid turnover than a municipality would. So you really lose some of that institutional memory of things going on. And that is one of the things, Dean and I are novices on the Science and Tech Committee, but there are some people on the committee who've been coming to the village for 30-odd years, and they're people who have some memory of when some changes were made in the system. One of the people who serves on the committee is actually one of those who installed the hydro plant. Huh. So it's helpful to have that kind of memory. We had a great discussion, was it 2 winters ago, about a hole in the pipe across Railroad Creek, and they were trying to remember when that piping as part of the water system was put in. And so.
Was there, did anybody keep track of when the water conservation measures were instituted? Like, you know, the don't flush if you have to and things like that. Did anybody keep track of whether they saved a lot of water by doing that, or how much it changed the water usage from 1 year to the next?
We have on record how much water, drinking water, we treated, just because we have to do that as part of our daily record keeping. We don't necessarily have how much was put in the sewer.
Huh. Okay.
We're doing that now mainly just to get a real good handle on how much sewage are we going to have to treat, how are we going to design this new system if we indeed can put it in.
It just seems like everybody follows that pretty religiously, and I wonder, you know, what's the effect?
Is it definitely has an effect. We use 15,000 gallons a day for 450 people. Hmm. And that's pretty good. You know, you wouldn't find that in the city.
What's the usual rate, you know?
For, I don't know what the village is.
150, so it's talked about 150 gallons per person a day out in the outside world. And we're talking about right here.
Wow.
14,000, so.
What I remembered for say a resort like this size in the outside world or normal place, something on the order of 60 to 100,000 gallons a day.
Wow, and we use 15,000?
15 to 30.
One. Goes into the wastewater system.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Right. And a lot of that is also infiltration, currently is infiltration. In other words, water, groundwater is going into the collection system because there are these roots that are growing into the piping. And
right.
So it's not necessarily the full load that goes through the village, but essentially, we're reducing our input to make up for the extra that was going through.
Right, and the first time I came into the village was actually 8 years ago this summer, and that was, I believe, the last major crisis in the system. They had actually had serious blockages in the whole pumping up between the septic system and the drain field. And arrived just after they'd actually been without being able to use everything in the village for, I think, actually a couple of days. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'd sort of been in crisis mode.
My first summer here in 1988, I ended up somehow getting on the detail that was shoveling stuff onto the drain fields. Because
to make those mounds?
Well, to shape the sides, mm-hmm. Because there was still effluent flowing out the sides.
And there's been effluent flowing out the sides every year since they were built. Yeah. Still flowing out the sides. that's what the Department of Ecology, Washi said, you fix it or we close you down. It's basically the last thing we say.
And this is really, if we look at the systems here in the village, this is really the one which is likely to have the most serious consequences for the village if something isn't done about it. In the future, before the regulatory agencies come in and really clamp down.
Yeah, I think there's also some institutional frustration, perhaps, given the number of times that Holden had to go through this and with problems and frustrations and challenges. Well, you know, I thought you fixed it then, or maybe, you know, I don't know how much this is accurate, but the feeling I've gotten is that...
Is there no redress against this guy that apparently moved the first time?
I don't think there has been. I'm not sure if the village either tried and didn't succeed or just decided not to do that route.
There's also some time that it takes before you realize whether it was correct or not.
Yeah,
which may have been.
Yeah, there were many years lapsed before they realized that it wasn't constructed correctly. Part of the problem, when you have an organization like Holden, there are currently 3 paid staff members at Holden. And that's the director, the business manager, and the operations manager. And everyone else is volunteer. And then the paid staff members are not paid much. And so when you work on it and then you have this incredible turnover, you're running a town on people who stay a year or two who have never done this before and will never do it again or only here a year or two to learn it. In some ways it's sort of amazing it works. It really has depended upon who has been in leadership at the time and how much attention they've paid to the details. Right now we have an operations manager who has really committed himself to making sure this problem is solved. And spending an inordinate amount of time making sure it works. Before we haven't had that oversight, for whatever reason, the personality of the person or because there were other emergencies they were focused on or whatever, when the sewer part was installed, there wasn't that oversight.
I also think the regulatory environment wasn't quite as challenging, mm-hmm. or as, mm-hmm. I don't know what the proper word would be for it, but as
stringent.
Yeah.
And it's, even without the regulatory, it's something we'd want to fix. It's irresponsible for us to have sewage leaking out of our fields and being able to go into the creek. So it's just a sort of environmental responsibility issue as well for Holden. I sort of perhaps spurred on by the fact that we now have been told that we will no longer be here if we don't fix it.
Do we have any feel at all where the majority of our wastewater comes from? Is it from the kitchen or is it from showers or?
Well, there's really two things. There's your just volume of water, which in itself isn't such a big deal. Water from showers is just water, mm-hmm. and you don't really need much treatment to it. What the problem comes in is the waste strength, and that's the, what is it? It's in the water that needs to be treated. And the biggest part of our waste strength comes from the dish pit, and it's from food particles. That's why we've started scraping our plates. Every little piece of food that is scraped off into the compost bin is that much more food that doesn't go in the septic system. Food takes a lot longer to be digested in the septic than does after it's been digested by you, just because it is more raw. And so that increases the waste strength. There's also this really hot water coming in, and then there's bleach from the disinfection in the dishwasher, and then there's bleach in the laundry, and they go in and end up killing a lot of the bacteria that are working to degrade the waste. And so the bacteria are in the tank eating away, and then this big thing of hot water comes and kills a bunch of them, and then they have to regrow and eat away, and then it's dish team again. And so you have this, and you know, with that bleach and that hot water, you have all this food that has to be digested too. And so it's this constant thing, and all these grease, you know, greases and oils, and they just don't digest well at all. So we've actually installed two surge tanks. I don't know if you look right outside the post office, there's two little black caps and some new dirt there. That's a surge tank. And the idea is that all the water from the dish pit goes in there, and it's like a little septic tank. It's a mini septic tank. And it has time to cool off. Some of the chlorine has a chance to evaporate, and some of the solids settle out, and then it goes over into the next tank. And then it more slowly enters the main tank, where the main digestion happens. So instead of just this big, it kind of gets there, and then sort of just peters on into the...
How big are they?
1,500 gallons.
Yeah.
And so, one for the laundry as well.
Yeah.
So and again, a holding tank.
You're saying that regular water is not a problem for your septic?
Well, it is, because we have all this water coming out because of other problems. Since we have this high waste rate, what happened is the way septic systems work, you have two different types of bacteria. You have what are called anaerobic, which don't use oxygen, and the other ones that smell bad, and then you got aerobic, which use oxygen. And the aerobes live in the soil, and the anaerobes live in the septic tank. That's why they're septic. So you have them all growing in here and all happy, and by the way it's supposed to be designed, by the time they get to the end, they have pretty much eaten all their food, and they die out, and then they fall to the bottom. And every 2 years, you scrape out all their bones, and you spray them out somewhere. Well, it's pumped into this big, long pipe, which is a quarter of a mile long, and it just sits there and basically starts septic again. So it's like another septic tank. And it doesn't, and then from there it's pumped directly into the fields. So you're actually pumping direct septic stuff right into your fields, and we have what's called an anaerobic slime mat, which is impermeable. So it's kind of gone over the sand that is supposed to percolate through, and it sort of sits there, and all this new water goes on top of it, can't get through, and goes to the side and comes out the side of the mouth. So if we didn't have the waste strength problem, it wouldn't matter how much water we put in. But since we had this waste strength problem that basically plugged up everything, now the more water you put in, the more runs off the side.
So the answer to your question is sort of yes. All of it's a problem currently. Chris, you had a question.
The laundry's cut way back on the bleach they use.
Yes, they have.
Yeah.
Yeah. But part of that was one of my questions. Is the bleach that goes into the system bleach that's used for meeting regulations? Or is it bleach that you could just tell people not to use bleach in their clothes and it doesn't matter? I mean, do people have to bleach the sheets and towels?
Laundry, I believe, uses bleach as part of the disinfection.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And we also use bleach in the we have to do one of two things with the plates that come out can't just be washed, they have to be sanitized.
Right, right.
And so you either do that by having really hot water, 182 degree water, or by having bleach. And if you're not getting up to 182 degrees, then you pump in bleach on it.
Right.
But chlorine is something that dissipates relatively rapidly, I understand.
If it doesn't form a byproduct.
Now, if you conserve more water, does that make the waste strength higher or not?
It does make the waste strength higher because it makes it more concentrated. But it also means that you have to treat less stuff. And since right now we're at a problem where any, even just water that's going in there causes a problem, we have to conserve our water and then try to fix the problem as well. If the septic system had been functioning properly, we could put more water into it. It would be, in some ways, it teaches us to be more responsible by being more conservation-minded. But if it worked correctly, it wouldn't matter so much.
Right.
How many times you flush and how long you shower.
Any question?
Getting back to the water supply, is the shortage for irrigation of lawns and so on caused because it all has to go through the filters, or?
Yes.
That's, it can't handle enough water.
We're still getting the kinks worked out in the filtration system. And part of the things with the filter, the more gunk that's in the water, the slower the filters filter because they get kind of plugged up. So when we have really high melt days and you get just, you know, pine needles and everything else in the water, then that kind of blocks up your filters so they don't filter as much. So all of our filters may be on, but instead of doing 72,000 gallons a day, we may only be doing 20,000 gallons a day, just because they're full of pine needles and things. And so that's just, it's not enough to be able to water the whole lawns and everything as well. And then right now we're working on some, just we're having some problems that we're working with the filtration system. So we've had to, we're not at full capacity right now.
Are you doing? It's been a problem all summer.
Well, with all of them on, we pretty much managed fine. There was one day where they watered the gazoo out of the lawns, basically turned on every sprinkler in the village for hours, and used about 60,000 gallons in one day. So basically 45,000 gallons were poured onto the lawn in one day. And that was the problem. That reached our, you know, up end of our limit.
Do you know how much was used, say, like 10 years ago or 15 years ago?
Yeah, we can look back in the records. I haven't looked back that far. I've only looked back, how far? I think I looked back the last 5 or 6 years. And the highest use in a day was 75,000 gallons, I think. And that was a hot summer day. A lot of water.
And your capacity now, maximum capacity that you have is... 50,000?
72.
But it has not yet done 72 in a day, is that what you said?
So it's, that's the theoretical capacity. The actual capacity has been 62. It's the best we've done in a day.
The system, what, it was an October 31st deadline to have the filtration system in place, and it was met by a few days. And so we're still working the kinks out of this being the first summer of, you know, full capacity and full use. Saturday night, Vespers is going to be held up at the new garage for the dedication of the new garage, and I presume that you will spend a certain portion of your evening showing people the water filtration system, for those who are interested, because it, part of the construction of the new garage was to house the filtration plant, which had to be inside a building that had some heat in it, as well as power and so on. So that will be there if people are interested in seeing that. I don't want to throw people out, but we've sort of reached an hour, and I know that we all have another commitment to go to in a few minutes. We could sort of end the formal part of this.